Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. I'm Daniel Henry Price, joined by Eric Sorensen. Eric, are you ready for the final judgment? That's the heading today.
That's a great question. You know what? Even if I'm not ready, Christ has declared me to be ready.
Hey,
and so I am confident that when that day comes, I will be ready.
I sounded like one of two things right there. I sounded like either like a youth group leader or just like an old school revival preacher.
Yeah, and it's a fair question, right? It's a fair question. I mean, the whole chapter of Matthew 25 and 24, what we've been going over, you know, has been be ready. That's fair enough. But, you know, I just wasn't expecting it at the beginning.
You weren't ready for it?
I was not ready, Dan.
I'm ready.
What about you? Are you ready for our upcoming conference in May?
No, but I'm excited.
Assuming that the final judgment doesn't come.
You know what? I was just on a phone call earlier today with Ed Nugent, the pastor over there. And yeah, things are shaping up good. We're talking about like free lunch at this event. We're talking about it's going to be great, man. So
yeah,
everyone should come out. We're going to talk about the Psalms. I alluded to this, but there's a surprise.
Oh man, I can't wait to tell the world about this surprise.
It's a surprise going to happen at the conference. It's
almost there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you guys should come. It's May 19th in North Dakota. If you're anywhere around there or just want to get on a plane, see a surprise, eat some food, hang out with us, listen to us talk about the Psalms and just hang out, you should do it. It's like it's $19 to come to this thing. It's going to be amazing. So, go over to ChristOldFast.org, go to the events page, and you can get all the information. And you should come hang out with us. And also, while you're there, check out the Here We Still Stand conference. It's happening in October. We're doing that bad boy again. That's just ridiculous. If you're not going to that, you are
missing out. Oh, there's no way around it. You are missing out if you don't go.
Missing out here.
It's so good.
That's one thing. This is one thing that is true. Like, we put on some events, man. We put on good events.
And they're always fun. I mean, yeah. It's not just good content. I mean, we have great content because we have really, really gifted teachers and gifted speakers come in, you know, to our events. That's true. But we also have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's huge, man. That's huge. Because I've been to plenty of conferences with great speakers where I get good content, but I wouldn't describe it as like a fun environment. I wouldn't describe my experience that way.
Right.
This has the best of both worlds. There's lots of time for, you know, there's lots of downtime to enjoy each other and have a good time, as well as great content.
Yeah. So come on, come hang out with us. Well, how about the final judgment?
How about the final judgment? A very famous passage in Matthew chapter 25, verse 31, known by some as sort of the story of the sheep and the goats. And so let me just read it and then we'll dig into it. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me." Then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me." Then they also will answer, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you? And he will answer them, saying, truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Well, then, if there's one thing that's abundantly clear from this passage, it's that the Protestants got it wrong. We are clearly saved by our works.
Clearly. Yeah.
I mean, it's not, it can't be doubted after reading this passage, right?
Well, it is funny. I mean, how many times, Eric, have you heard this passage used to make it where salvation is all about what you're doing?
It is the number one way I've heard this passage preached by people, by the way, pastors that would confess to be Protestants, that would confess sola fide, faith alone. But the way this passage is often preached by them is essentially just kidding.
Right. Yeah, this passage is not that difficult.
It's not. You just have to pay attention to the words, and you actually have to, I mean, if you do a little exegetical work, we come to find out that there's actually all sorts of reasons for why this passage isn't teaching that at all.
Right. It starts with this. Jesus does not, or the sheep and the goats are not divided by what they did and didn't do. They're not. There is this old song. I grew up listening to Keith Green.
I knew you were going to Keith Green. Yeah, it's classic.
And he had that crazy piano going on, and like he did a song about this. And at the end of it, he says, "So you see, the difference between the sheep and the goats is what they did.
What they did and didn't do." Right. And it just ends like that.
Yeah, and it's
I remember.
And wrong. That's not the difference. Let me tell you this. Maybe you don't have sheep and goats. You probably don't. I don't either. Let's use a different analogy. Cats and dogs. I got one of each of those.
Me too.
Okay. Now, my cat does certain things. My cat hates my guts. It loves everyone else in the house, not me.
Mine too.
Yeah, that's how it goes. It, you know, it poops in a box. It does all the things that cats do. My dog, on the other hand, loves me. And it is loyal. It's the sweetest thing in the world. It wants to cuddle all the time. It's great. Now,
mine too.
The fact that those that they do different things, that is not how I know. Like that's a cat and that's a dog. If you walked in my house, you'd be able to take one look at them and you wouldn't, without seeing any single thing that they've ever done, and you would know that right there is a cat, that right there is a dog. Now, when he divides the sheep and the goats, he doesn't divide them up by what they do. He divides them up by what they are.
Like you, very important point, Dan.
It's very important. So you are either a sheep or a goat, and you are divided up as such. It does not say, and he divided up the ones who did stuff over here and the ones who didn't do stuff over here. Now, here's the reality, is that goats do certain things and sheep do certain things, just like cats do certain things and dogs do certain things. It's not what makes them a cat or a dog. Mm-hmm. It's what they do.
Yes.
And so sheep do sheepy things, and goats do goaty things. And
I like that line. I'm tweeting that out. Yeah. Sheep do sheepy things, goats do goaty things.
That's right. That's right. It's the best thing I've ever said. It's profound. And so, look, the reality is that you have to be made a sheep. And then you are a sheep, and you are divided up according to what you are. He then goes in and describes like sort of how sheep operate and how goats operate. But what's striking about it is when he goes down the list of like, hey, enter into the joy of your father. And then he lists out all these things, these wonderful things that they did. They don't even know what he's talking about.
Right. That's really important to note. I mean, one of the things that I think before we even get there, it's just a dead giveaway sort of verse for how you should read this. If you go to verse 34, when he talks to the sheep, he says, come you who are blessed by my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. So the word inherit is really, really important. You don't do anything to get an inheritance. That is not something that is earned. That is something that is given.
It's also so it's something that an inheritance is something that you get by virtue of who you are, not what you do.
That's right. By virtue of who you're related to, or who you know, who you're close to,
who your father is.
That's correct. And it's prepared for them from the foundation of the world. So before good or bad or anything else happens. So just to put to bed the idea that this is teaching that the only difference between the two is what they did and didn't do, like Keith Green says, we have to just read the text and let the text speak for itself. First, before we get to any works, is we find out they get what they get because of what they inherit, because of who they're connected to.
Right.
Now, that produces then, as the rest of the Bible says, as Romans says, as Jada says, as everybody everywhere says, that when we are declared to be sheep, as you just so eloquently said, we will do sheepy things.
Right.
And those sheepy things are doing things like going to the least of these when they're hungry and giving them food, thirsty, giving them drink, welcoming the stranger, clothing the naked person, visiting the sick, and going to prisons, etc.
Which, by the way, let me just say this too. I'm gonna try to not go on a rant here, but one thing you will hear a lot from people who have some opposition to Christianity. So, like, it was just the Sanctity of Life Sunday. So where all across the country, people stood up for the lives of the unborn.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you hear a lot, I hear a lot, I have a lot of non-Christian friends, is they'll be like, yeah, Christians care about babies, but they don't care about people.
Yeah, they don't care about the physical needs of real humans.
Right, so the idea here is that, yeah, you want children to be born, but you don't want to give them all the things they need or single mothers what they need. Let me just help you out here, and I'm going to tie this in, and you'll see why. That's a load of garbage.
Not just, I think it needs to be emphasized more, Dan. There could not be a greater lie than that.
Right. Because the church does the vast majority of humanitarian work. It just does. It always has. When it comes to homeless shelters, food banks, adoption centers, hospitals, the church has always led the way in these things. The church does the vast majority of these. Christians adopt at a 2-to-1 rate of anyone else. Like that. This is just true. Now, I say that to say this, because there is a sense in which you might individualize this too much, okay? So you might be like, oh, man, how many people have I visited in prison? How many people have I visited in the hospital? This kind of thing, right? Listen, he has the sheep all gathered up, and he's talking to them collectively. And part of the reason you give to the church is so that the church can do this stuff. Because when the church as a whole provides food and shelter and adoption services and you name it, natural disaster relief, when they do that, that is done by the people through the church. And so, you got a full-time job probably and a family maybe. You're probably not going and visiting a whole bunch of people in prison. I mean, maybe if you knew someone there, you would, but you're not just randomly going to visit people in prison. You're not randomly going to see sick people in the hospital unless, it's somebody that you have a loved one there. But the church does do those things. The church does all of those things. And you're part of that as part of the church. And so I don't want to discourage you from helping people, helping the least of these. I want to encourage you to do that. But I also want to soothe your conscience a little bit in knowing that if you belong to a church and you're kind of active in that church, especially if you're giving, that church is most likely as well contributing to the needs of society in these other ways. So when a pastor is able to go into to visit someone in jail or go talk to someone in the hospital, or the church supports some humanitarian effort, like that is you doing that.
Right. Yeah. Whether you're, there's people that are sent physically, and then there are senders, to use sort of mission language. And, as the church, we're one or the other. Most of us are probably not those who are sent.
Right.
Like out on the mission field, for example. But we can be senders. We can be people that are contributing in that way. And that is just as important.
Right. One of the examples I've heard is like only one person goes down into the well, but a whole bunch of people hold the rope.
That's right. I think that's a good corrective, a good sort of clarification about this, that the specific things Jesus mentions here are not, you know, the only things. I think it's important to note that they might not
be done by you individually, but they're done by the church corporately.
Right, right. And I think it's also important to note, you know, just that Jesus is not served in this passage. He does not present himself served by the sheep because of their spiritual navel-gazing. He doesn't mention in here, when he mentions the good works that they do, he doesn't say, you are always on time with your devotions every day. You spent 25 minutes in my word. You prayed persistently every single day. Now, of course, those are good things to do. But the point I want to focus on is that Jesus is served by us serving our neighbor. Mm-hmm. That is how the service happens to him, by serving the least of these. And he doesn't mention at the end, when judgment comes, like all the other things that we tend to emphasize a lot from our pulpits.
Right, right. And I think that you see that the judgment is dished out. I mean, the other people, they're divided. The goats are divided up by what they are. Those who have rejected God, those who have not been adopted in. And then likewise, he says, yeah, none of these things are characteristics of you. And I'm going to argue that the reason that the bulk of these things that he says that these things don't represent how these are not descriptions of how they live their lives is partially due to the fact that they're not in the church. They're not part of the church.
Yeah. And I would just say too, there's an implication from their response to him. So the righteous people are surprised. Like,
right.
Oh, when did I do this? The unrighteous are surprised that they're not getting credit for doing it.
Right. And they have done it.
If I saw it,
I sure would have done it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, when they hear that they didn't do it, they're like, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger? I mean, so they're like, well, of course I did. You know, like, again, if we look at what causes judgment or condemnation to come throughout Scripture, it's people coming with an expectation that their works will be what justifies them.
Right. In another telling of this parable or talking about the final judgment, it's added that, you know, you do have this where they say like, hey, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and do many wonders and miracles? There is a thing where like you will try to push back on your piety and your spiritual prowess, you know, all the awesome spiritual things you did. And God's not interested.
Yeah, he's not impressed at all.
No, no.
Matter of fact, his response is like, yeah, that's great. I never knew you.
Right. And so it's important when you look at this to know that you are divided up. You are separated by what you are, not by what you do. You inherit the kingdom of heaven based on who your father is. And that as part of that adoption, there are good things done to the least of these that are naturally done, that the church has always done.
That's right.
And that you are part of that. That is the point of this. And that those outside the church, outside of faith, you know, because this is the other thing that's important to remember, that without faith, it's impossible to please God. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely not saying that no one who doesn't, who is outside the church has ever, they've never done a good thing. That's not what I'm saying. They've never helped anybody. Of course, many of them have. The issue is that apart from faith, there is no good works in God's book,
right?
That are not done in faith.
Right. It's ultimately, that's the starting point, and that's what produces a truly good work in his sight. As the Apostle Paul says, he just very simply says, anything done apart from faith is sin.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So, yeah. It's funny. The opposite of sin is not obedience. The opposite of sin is faith.
Right. Right. So now we move back into the narrative. With the time we have left, we're going to get really into the nitty-gritty of the Passion Week of Jesus's life. And we're really coming down to the end here. We're at Matthew 26. And it reads like this. It says, "When Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said to his disciples, 'You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified.' Then the chief priests and the elders of the people gathered in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and plotted together in order to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they said, 'Not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people.'" That's pretty straightforward. It's basically acknowledging that the high priests and those in power recognize Jesus's popularity at the moment, recognize that he's got something that the crowd is very interested in, and they're trying to do this in secret because they don't want to have a rebellion on their hands.
Right. This is one of the most explicit. I mean, Jesus has alluded to this over and over and over again, right? His death. He gets pretty detailed right here. I mean, he says, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified." I mean, he actually spells out exactly how he's going to die.
Right, and of course we know from other passages that the disciples don't receive this. The disciples right. still are like, "Oh, nah, not really.
Right?
Nah, you're wrong. You're wrong. No, I'm telling you." I know better than you, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're still freaked out about it when it happens, and they don't push back right here, at least it doesn't tell you to. At this point, they probably are tired of getting rebuked.
That's right. So they go, okay, just let him say what he wants to say.
Talking about his death again. Just leave it alone. Peter, don't do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah. And I think we'll close with this last passage here as we then move into, like, that final night before he's arrested. In verse 6 of chapter 26, "Now when Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came up to him with an alabaster flask of very expensive ointment, and she poured it on his head as he reclined at table. And when the disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, 'Why this waste? This could have been sold for a large sum and given to the poor.'" Oh man, this self-righteousness. Oh gosh, I could say so much about this social justice warrior nonsense right here that's coming out of the disciples. "But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, 'Why do you trouble the woman? For she has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. In pouring this ointment on my body, she has done it to prepare me for burial. Truly I say to you, wherever this gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her."
That's quite a statement. When you know, okay, so like part of you would be like, "Man, what a waste!" You're like, indeed, waste indeed. Yeah. Like perfume, ointment, like that's not important. It's not like, what the heck. And if you can sell it and then like do some good with it, do it, man. Do that. That would be quite virtuous. And then Jesus' response, man, like, "The poor you always have with me." Or with you, the poor you always have with you, but me you do not always have with you. Don't be mistaken. Jesus just said, like, yeah, there's always going to be poor people, but you're not always going to have me.
Right.
There's no way around it.
That's what he's saying.
And like, does this mean that Jesus is against poor people? Well, you're going to be tough. It's going to be tough to make that case based on his life.
Yeah, there's no way you can say that based on what we just read in the final judgment. There's literally no way you can make that case. But he is saying, yes, in the final analysis, I'm more important. Why? Because I'm God.
Right.
And I'm God. And worshiping me is more important ultimately.
There's also this sort of like side thing where we are told to help the poor. Mm-hmm. No way around that. Absolutely is the case. That we are to, as the church, we are to help those in need. And at the same time, Jesus makes it very clear here that will always be the case.
Mm-hmm. So we'll always have the poor. Yes.
Always, like that there is not going to be a time where we eradicate poverty. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean,
and does that mean that we don't try to help them? No, it doesn't. But what it does mean is that we help those we can help, and we take it individually, and we help people in need. But the idea that we can create a world in a society in this fallen world where there's only haves and no have-nots is not going to happen. There's too much sin for that.
Yes, that's correct. And any time it's been tried throughout history, it's always ended up the same, with the corrupt, with a certain small few being corrupted and taking all the goods and the wealth, and still you have the have and the have-nots. You know, one thing that's just important to point out, I mean, that makes it a little more understandable for the disciples' reaction of why this waste. I mean, the ointment that she poured on him was worth over a year's wages. I mean, like, it's it wasn't just like an expensive bottle of eternity for men. I mean, this was right. Extremely expensive. This was really, really pricey.
Yeah, they didn't mean that. They weren't saying like, oh man, we could have got $50 for that.
No. They're like, we could have gotten $50,000 for that.
Right.
We could have done a lot of good. But here's the thing. I mean, you know, the motivations of the disciples, they were indignant saying, why this waste? It's just, it's not believable at all. And, you know, Judas, of course, is the one who's most upset about this whole thing, pretending to be concerned about the poor. In fact, Judas is the one who's been stealing, as we find out from other gospel accounts. So, you know, but he's not alone. They're all, you know, it says they all were indignant. And it just goes to show, like, you know, there's a ton. If we could just bring this down to modern day and sort of relate it to our situation. I'm sure you've heard it before, Dan. I know I've heard it. People will often complain about how, you know, how much the church spends on buildings, how much the church spends on sound systems, how much the church spends on, you know, decor and things in the sanctuary. And they'll say that should be going to the poor. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I totally resonate with that. Do I think that the church has abused money and has not used it wisely and maybe should think about not, you know, making things so fancy in sanctuaries and that sort of thing? Yes, I resonate with that. I do. I understand the complaint. There has been sort of excess at times. However, to say that we can't do anything to make the place where we worship God look nice or to downplay the significance of trying to create a sacred space, which inevitably will cost money, I think is a mistake too.
Well, it's unbiblical because the reality is that if you all the way back to the Old Testament, if you look at the tabernacle, man, that thing was not cheap.
That's right.
That thing was ornate. And yes. And there is something about beauty and aesthetics that that God thinks that matter, and we should think they matter too. We don't. There's can it be? Can we go over the top? Yep. Mm-hmm. But should we? Is it ever stated, like, you know? I know people be like, early church, you know, meeting in some catacombs. Well, that's because they were under severe persecution.
That wasn't by choice.
That's like a necessity thing. Okay. Right. Like, well, the underground church meets underground, not because underground's cheap, but because underground is safe.
That's
and
correct.
So, you know, so yeah, you got to, and like, Jesus does kind of pump the brakes on some of this here. Like, look, there's going to be ample opportunity to help people, and you should help people. There's a place for what other people would see as wasteful to do something. I mean, because that's all that's happening here is that she is doing something beautiful for Jesus.
That's right. And it was hers to begin with, yeah. By the way. I mean, it was hers.
It was hers.
She had every right and freedom to do with it what she wanted, and right. She chose to use it as an act of devotion and worship.
Right.
Good for her.
Right.
And who are we to judge her actions?
Right. And so if you want to put in if you've got a bunch of money and you want to donate and put in a bunch of stained glass in your church, knock yourself out. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
I think it's great. Yeah.
And that's
it.
And
if you have a bunch of money and you want to give it to the poor, give it to the poor. That's great too.
Or Christ Old Fast, whatever you want to do. hey, guys, that's it. Go check out those events. We want to see you there. We want to hang out with you. It'd be a good time. We are heading into the end of Matthew. It'll only be a couple more weeks before we're plowing through this thing, and we might be getting close with Easter and with the resurrection. We're gonna see if we can manipulate this a little bit, because it seems like it's been predestined. So, Eric, we'll see you next week.
All right, sounds good.